Hey everyone, Star Master Jeff here, and welcome back to the Star Master Log. Today we're discussing the third episode of the Sibilant arc entitled Laser Beams for Eyes. In this episode, the crew faces a lethal security system within the powered alien exosite. Following their previous discovery of a virtual ocean and nanofluid pool, the crew enters a long hallway filled with vats, each containing a mysterious calcified beak. Their progress is halted by a mechanical whirring noise, leading to the discovery of an annihilation bot, a squid-crab hybrid robot designed to ensure that no one leaves the facility. So we're going to break down this episode in just a moment, but first, let's check in with the crew and hear their latest encrypted reports. And I'll catch you on the other side.
Felix here. You know, I can't believe it. My first encounter with alien robotics, and they try to kill me. That was amazing! Oh, my mind is spinning right now, generating endless possibilities and theories that are practically making me dizzy. I mean, are these robots in the traditional mechanical sense? Probably not, as they seem to be built or maybe grown from some kind of nanofluid. And as we saw, they have a kind of self-replicating functionality. Oh, I cannot wait to get back to the goat and take this one apart. Who knows what kind of discoveries I can make? I just have to make sure Vera doesn't try to keep it for herself. You know, she has a really unappealing obsession with funding that I simply find grotesque in someone who professes to be a scientist. Okay, slow down. First things first, Felix. We have to get out of here. You know, I thought I felt some fresh air down this hole, so hopefully there is a way out. But first, who knows what other amazing discoveries might await us on the way?
Robert Ross's log. I felt it the moment we clocked this alien sludge factory. That tension in the air before impending violence. We went full extermination on this Dalek-looking Squiddy and his robo-spawn, textbook scorched earth. I burnt worse nests than this. Not the first time I've been on cleanup crew, and there's a lot more shit to shovel in this heap. Why a medical facility has a robo-tentacle monster, I don't think I want to know, but this feels less like perimeter defense, and more like a containment measure. That thing wasn't guarding patients, it was guarding secrets. Crew stayed frosty though, weapons hot, heads on swivels. Thorn caught a small through and through, nothing vital, walked it off, and got a fresh set of nails to boot. Man, it's been a minute since I've got a mani-pedi. Robert Vatgu Ross loves a mani-pedi.
Okay, so it got worse, but in a new way. The variety of alien tech here is impressive, to say the least. I'll insert a description from Vera if we ever get out of here. I'm sure she'll have to come up with something good for the auction, although corpos are definitely going to buy up self-replicating annihilation bots. You know, I think Vera would throw us in with the site too, if she could. Just really wanting to make a lot of money here, and I don't think she even understands what she's selling. But to do that, we gotta get out of here first. This started with us opening a door. What was this place used for anyways? And why would someone wanting to be making these on Sibilant of all places? But Felix gets one of these guys back to the ship, I wonder if I can turn it into a sparring partner. It is self-replicating, so it can heal itself. That'll work, right?
It's official. We finally found some powered alien tech. This is great. Now we just have to get out of here with it. And our lives, I guess. It's a shame I had to use that pre-tech stuff. I know it's super rare, but damn if it didn't do the trick. I can't even see a mark from that laser burn anymore. Not to mention these nails. If we can convince the buyers that all the stuff in here is working, this site is gonna go for an astronomical price. The crew seems like they're pretty nervous that Vera's gonna try to screw us over somehow in all this, but I'm really confident in the deal we made. I just hope whatever else is working down here doesn't kill us all before we get out with it. It's too bad I didn't spend more time practicing with firearms. I don't mind relying on the others, but I'm starting to feel like dead weight sometimes. Maybe Robert can give me some shooting tips sometime or something. Or maybe I can get Felix to install some kind of aim assist on this thing. I wonder if Haley can show me how to rip a guy's head off.
Well, that was the crew's take on this episode, but let's take a step back and talk about what I saw. This is Star Master Jeff, and you're listening to the Star Master Log. Let's talk about how that session went for me, what was planned, what I found surprising, and how much I'm actually improvising behind the screen. If you're into GMing, world building, or just curious about how the story takes shape, this segment is for you. So this episode dealt with a pretty deadly combat that the characters came out of relatively unscathed from, thanks to a few surprising twists that I really hadn't quite anticipated. When I say relatively unscathed, obviously Thorn got shot, but he's been shot before. I think at this point, we kind of expect that when they get into a firefight, Thorn's going to get hit. And I'm not picking on him. I'm rolling randomly most of the time about who's going to be hit when there's lots of targets. Unless there's an obvious super threatening target or a target that's really close to the enemy. But, you know, when he's getting shot, it's probably because he shot first. So beyond Thorn getting shot, which is not a surprise at all, I think that the biggest surprise to me was Felix having a reckless sprint to the back of the room to find the source of a mysterious signal that he had picked up on his datapad, hoping against hope that there was something back there he could use. Thankfully for him, his assumptions about the signal were correct, and he found a goo cake on the wall back there. Of course, we know now that goo cakes are really nanofluid, and they can do a whole host of things. So running back there past the squid crab and deciding to just shove his hand into the goo to then make a generic programming roll to see if he could try to shut down the bots or what sort of control he could take over the bots, I thought that was super cool. I did not anticipate that. The goo cake is in there, not because I wanted them to use it during the battle, but because it's the control panel for the vats and for the goo tube that leads downward to the next level. But of course, anything with nanofluid is connected to the network. So with a proficient enough programming role, I don't see why Felix couldn't try to shut down or take control of an annihilation bot. Of course, he didn't roll as well as he could have, but if you remember from my last Star Master log, I actually gave him a secret +1 to this role because completely enveloping himself into the goo pool and using the virtual ocean connected him to the network. And anytime anyone sort of uses the goo, it's akin to getting a light brain graft so that they can access that network. And every time you use it, it gets easier for you to use. Hence the secret +1 that he received, because he is now a known quantity to the alien network. So the goo is a bit easier to use. Even with the role that wasn't fantastic, he manages to seize control of a single annihilation bot, completely removing that combatant from the fight and holding it still while the rest of the crew just burned it to the ground. It's decisions like that are why I love gaming, especially OSR gaming. For anyone that's not familiar with the term, it's old school renaissance or old school revival. It's a kickback to a type of gaming that I grew up with, like Advanced Dungeons and Dragons back in the day, which is what I grew up playing from 10 years old onward. And it's less about the statistics on the page and more about using your creativity in the environment that was explained to you. As a game master of OSR games, I don't like to limit creativity by saying, well, as per the rule on page 332, I don't really think you can blah, blah, blah. I like to take the spirit of what they're trying to do and figure out how to make it work. And sometimes it's going to boil down to a roll. Other times, a failed roll still means a partial success. It's all about balancing that rule of cool with that OSR feel. And it's moments like Felix had in this episode that really strike that balance really well. And it's one of the reasons I absolutely love gaming. So I wanted to go back to the Annihilation Bot real quick, because I actually took quite a long time to come up with the design of those enemies. I knew that their purpose was to keep captives inside the facility and that they were part of the larger goo network. But I also wanted to make sure that I left hints in their design as to the intent of the inventors behind them. So first off, I landed on a squid crab-like robot that could not only regenerate, but self-replicate as well. I based these abilities on how some species of starfish, specifically the Lynkia, can form a completely new starfish from a single detached arm. So if you cut off the arm of this starfish, you may even end up with two starfish. Kind of like an earthworm. And I wanted a combat where a single guard bot could hold down the fort of the facility but could quickly call in reinforcements if needed. I didn't want an army of bots patrolling the facility because that just doesn't make sense to me. But a single bot that can split, self-replicate, and auto-heal, thus calling an army of reinforcements when attacked automatically, that makes a lot more sense to me. So I created the bot to be mostly comprised of nanofluid so that splitting and growing is no problem for it, especially after the goo vats start shattering. It simply had to suck up nanofluid from the floor and start forming helpers. Now, I thought this was a really cool idea when I was writing it down, but it turned out that I also really liked the idea in practice when I was actually running the game. It made every hit feel like a mistake. Every time a character would shoot the Annihilation Bot, it came with the fear that a baby Annihilation Bot would be forming soon. It wasn't until they landed a few extremely hard-hitting shots and then Felix took control of one of the bots that things started to turn around for our heroes. If the battle had gone slightly differently, there could have easily been a new Annihilation Bot generated every round, or perhaps even faster. For every Annihilation Bot that's created, it can create another Annihilation Bot. And with the amount of nanofluid available on the floor due to multiple cracked vats, each bot could have produced another bot, doubling the number of enemies every few rounds. It's a very scary thought. It's a very dangerous combat. But once again, the luck of the crew won out, and they squeaked by this encounter with only a few wounds once again, showing that some creativity and carefulness in combat far outstrips anything that could be written down on a character sheet. The adeptness and inventiveness of the players always wins. When I was creating the Annihilation Bot, I wanted to make sure I picked something that made sense as a guard of this facility. Something that's unobtrusive and not too large. It's going to be able to climb and use all of the different pieces of the facility and make its way around without any sort of problems. Because this is not a normal medical facility. It's a medical facility that needs a guard bot. Now, why is that? In today's deep dive, I just want to explore that question and speak a little to what may have been happening in the sector back when this alien race was the dominant species. So the room that this entire episode takes place in is full of large vats arranged in tidy rows. Each vat is filled with nanofluid, with a single calcified beak resting at the bottom. In the previous episode, we learned that this facility was medical in nature and, in fact, was a quarantine for some terrible disease that was sweeping the sector. As Dr. Voss said in the last episode, this facility was likely one of many, and in this facility alone can be counted over 100 vats, each of which can be assumed once contained an alien being, likely in quarantine due to whatever disease was plaguing their society. The being would be suspended in nanofluid, allowing them access to the virtual ocean, or as Thorne said, like a more advanced version of virtual reality. As a quarantine facility, keeping the patient safe and comfortable would be just as important as keeping them inside the facility. Although each had their own personal VR and likely the best medical treatment available at the time, they were still captives nonetheless. The Annihilation Bot would have patrolled the facility to protect the patients, but also, quite clearly, to keep them in. Whatever this plague was, no infected being would be allowed to leave. And if we take one step out from that, we know from the last episode that the alien beings had some sort of colonies on Polyphen and Wafisa as well, because in the virtual ocean, Dr. Voss was able to see that they were aware of those planets. But only on Sibylline did we find these medical facilities, and this was not the only one. She said that there were many of them. This whole planet could have possibly been rife with these types of facilities. An entire planet of alien beings infected with some mysterious plague that they did not know how to cure, and so simply shipped them off to the edges of the sector to live the remainder of their lives in virtual reality. And where exactly have their bodies gone, leaving behind only these odd calcified beaks? They simply melted into the goo, becoming part of the nanofluid. It seems as though this facility may actually raise more questions than it answers. But what else can you expect from the first powered alien exosite in human history? We'll be exploring the answers to those questions as the season develops further. But in the meantime, I'd like to shift over to the subspace signals where I answer a question from one of our listeners. Make sure you listen to the end of the segment if you'd like to have a question here on the Star Master Log. This week's question is from an anonymous listener who actually listens to us through our weekly blog entries, which you can find on darkstaradventures.com. This anonymous questioner asks, what guidance did the players have for picking a backstory? Was Stars Without Numbers psychic class forbidden? For world-building reasons or scenario design reasons, or did everyone just happen to collectively pick two experts and two warriors? Ooh, okay, we got our first crunchy question this week. So, a little bit on GMing style, I'm a notoriously hands-off GM. I don't really like to prescribe anything to the players unless they come to me for advice. I tend to give background and guidance as to the campaign and the sector, but beyond that, I'm not really a fan of being involved in character creation. For this game, I wanted to keep the story grounded and then grow into something weirder as the story took shape. But I didn't want to pre-decide what that weirdness would be. I wanted it to organically come from the characters and the story that was developing. So yes, I did ask the players to ignore the psionic class and anything having to do with heavy body modifications to start. But that doesn't mean we won't have some developments in those areas as the game progresses. I didn't want something like psychic powers to feel common. I want them to feel special and earned. I want them to have a strong story impact. Perhaps it's even a goal of one of the players, like Felix, wanting to transcend human flesh. If I just allowed everyone to have a ton of body modifications right at the beginning, he would already be well on his journey. But instead, it's a goal that he must scrap and save and earn for. He must find the biomods. He must find the doctors. And that is the only way he will accomplish his goal. So that's a little bit of a GM design decision. But as for the classes that they chose, it actually happened purely by happenstance. We got two experts, which would be Felix and Thorn, and two warriors, which is Robert and Haley. Each of the four players came up with an idea of what they wanted to play. And then when we got together for session zero, they worked through those ideas as a group to make sure they had all the important roles covered. But one thing I did actually ask is I asked them to come up with bonds with other characters and a personal flaw for their characters, which is an idea that we lifted wholesale from Dungeon World, a fantastic TTRPG. That's how you end up with Haley and Robert being old squad mates, Felix's drug addiction, and Thorne's high ideals of quote-unquote fairness in the face of late-stage capitalism. Well, anonymous person that listens to us on our blog entries, thanks so much for submitting your question. If you, other listeners, want to send in a signal for our next log, head on over to Patreon at patreon.com/darkstaradventurecast, because our patrons always have top priority in the queue. But I do pay close attention to our socials, such as our blog entries and on Blue Sky. So drop us a line there, and your question just might be the next one we intercept. Before we close the log for this week, I want to leave you with another Star Master spec. In this section, I give you a quick recommendation of some piece of media that I really enjoyed and has something to do with this week's episode. So the Annihilation Bot, which was the focus of this week, was partially based on a slew of science fiction media that's wormed its way into my head over the course of my life, but none more so than the movie Edge of Tomorrow. It stars Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt fighting grotesque amounts of Annihilation Bot-looking beings called Mimics. It's crazy, it's weird, and it's a fun action film with a seriously great time-looping mechanic, and I love a time travel film. I highly recommend it if you want a fun popcorn film that'll give you that Annihilation Bot feel. Also, if you're a reader, check out the light novel All You Need Is Kill by Hiroshi Sakurazawa. It was the basis for the Edge of Tomorrow movie. It's very fun as well. It's sort of like, what if your life was a video game and you could just keep trying the level over and over again, which is what we see in the movie, but it's much more spelled out in the book. It sort of feels like Full Metal Jacket meets Alien with a bit of Dungeon Crawler Carl mixed in, and I absolutely loved it. In the next episode, our crew descends the goo tube they found to the basement level of the facility and find a hidden piece of technology that is both startlingly familiar and decidedly alien. The crew remembers their fight with the void cultists, a surgical theater is found, and Haley and Robert begin to face their past. All this and more on the next episode of the Dark Star Adventure Cast. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll catch you on the next one. If you want to hear every episode before the public feed, the Patreon is how you do it. $5 a month gets you everything 2 weeks early. The main episodes, the Star Master logs, and even the SWN rules breakdown that Brian records to go with each and every episode. Head on over to patreon.com/darkstaradventurecast, because the next episode is already out.